Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From the Polytechnic University of Valencia in Italy comes an article about how antioxidant-rich powders from blueberry and persimmons could be good for our gut microbiota. This is published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. And it's saying, in effect, in quote, in recent years, fruits and vegetable powders have become popular as a way to add beneficial compounds such as polyphenols and carotenoids, which are, by the way, two types of antioxidants, to the diet, either by consuming the powders directly or as an ingredient in food products. However, in many cases, these healthful compounds are present at similar or even higher levels in byproducts compared to those in other parts of the fruit and vegetable. So what it means is that when we're processing food, we're frequently eliminating a lot that could be saved and used. Interesting, because for those of us in the health field, we're already aware of that. I'm glad they're finding that out. So what does it mean, especially as these foods are prebiotic in nature, meaning they can build good bacteria in your intestine? I'll deal with that along with many other health issues on today's program. But after listening to some of the arguments being made as to why the violence we're seeing in many parts of the United States is justified and why it's all the police's fault or all the administration's fault for sending in police to guard these federal buildings, and then everything then is an attack, shaming one side and glorifying another. It's a black and white issue. That means that it has been politicized and therefore the argument's weaponized. Where does this lead? It does not lead to resolving conflicts. It does not lead to focusing upon important issues and resolving them peacefully. It does not lead to us working together in a conciliatory and forgiving manner. It does not help anyone except those who have engineered this. If you think all this is spontaneous, it is not. So we're going to deconstruct this with some positive input. But nothing about today. No, I'm going to go back to Confucius and Taoism to explain why ancient knowledge is prescient today. And therefore, if we want to grow as human beings, liberate our spiritual values, see the sacredness in people, not the pigmentation of their skin, which is irrelevant to who they are, but we've made it everything about who you are. Every single issue today, no matter what it is, it's about race. When a group of students chose not to study for math or were afraid of math, they simply said it was racist, and suddenly overnight the entire country says math is racist and we shouldn't have to take any more math. Shouldn't have to teach it. And, oh, by the way, let's stop all testing. Let's stop all entrance exams. So there's no qualification to get into university. In fact, you must have everyone from every level of society allowed in at the same time. And the whole concept historically of meritocracy should be avoided because it's also racist. So when you're able to take every single issue in life and make it racist, wow, what kind of minds are behind this, and where do you think this leads? So I'm going to confront that with Confucius and see what you think. Also today, I'm going to play an audio clip that I thought would be of interest to you. It's how a group of individuals working within the government and private industry have met, and the government, meaning we, the taxpayers, never the government, understand something. When the government spends money, it's never the government money. It's our money. Could we get them to spend it on us? Absolutely not. Except for things such as food, stamps, or some other issues that are important and needed. But will they spend the money on de-ghettoizing? No. On free education? No. On rebuilding an infrastructure in every area of the United States so we can have gainful employment? Absolutely not. They give it to the wrong people. They subsidize industries that are for-profit industries that loathe socialism, but at the same time are the biggest takers of social RGs from the average person. So that's why we challenge these and have for a long time. So we're going to give you an insight of what they're doing if you've chosen to question the safety and efficacy of vaccine. That means if you're a parent, and I interviewed one, filmed her, you'll see her in AIDS A Second Opinion, Vaccine Nation, and she has three children. Two she vaccinated exactly as she was told. They both ended up autistic. The third she chose not to, but to find out why, when her doctors denied there was a vaccine connection to the children's autism, she began to pour her time and energy into research. And within 6 months, she had an overwhelming preponderance of information that the vaccines had never been proven safe or effective for a given child, and she is correct. Everything you've been told about vaccines is either partial truths or complete lies. But because so many people are profiting from it, and because the big lie has been institutionalized, we simply accept it and go along with it. So that makes you an enemy of the state, and that means that any information on any platform you're using must be monitored 24/7 and a program to dissuade the public that you are legitimate. You have no legitimacy, that no platform should allow you to promote anything on it, no matter how scientific, the veracity of your claims or honesty. You're to be expunged. You're to be eliminated. You're to be erased from the dialogue. That's going on right now. We have proof of it because you're going to hear from the person running it. And I want to thank Big Tree for finding this clip. And since the first 60 seconds of the clip when he starts to give it is nonverbal, I'll read what they're saying is their mission. They're acknowledging this mission. So no longer is any of this being done by a cabal in secrecy. This is being done in the open. That's how much power they have. When you have the New York Times on your side and CNN and all the media, you can do this and get away with it. So we're going to show you why you should be very concerned about not trusting anything the media says today. And by the way, we will have a chance to call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Most people listen to this program on the archives, and if you'd like our archive number, please take it down. It's 701-719-9976. But a lot of people, and when I say a lot, I mean a lot, are listening over cell phones or computers. And that number to listen live is 774-337-6068. 774-337-6068. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. And I'm going to try to put this into a broader context. What this article about antioxidant-rich powders is saying is that when we're processing foods, including fruits and vegetables, a lot of it's thrown away. The fibrous part is thrown away. So that, unfortunately, is some of the best part of it. Because these fibers, when eaten, like when you eat a celery or a carrot or blueberry, it's able to digest in the intestine, large colon, and then it creates good bacteria that in turn stimulates the immune system throughout the whole body. And it feeds what is called the second brain in our intestine. So, by eating more whole foods, meaning without high processing, you're benefiting tremendously. And so this study done at the Polytechnic University in Valencia in Italy is saying we should be collecting all the fiber from all the foods that have been processed and make it into a powder for people to use. And it makes sense. And by the way, that's what they do for animals. And we could do the same thing for humans. So, something to think about. But I know a lot of you are already using powders that have everything in it, nothing thrown away. So you're on the right side of that. Now, the University of Warwick, which is in the United Kingdom, is saying that a plant-based diet is shown to lower blood pressure even if a person eats meat and dairy. So, simply stated, a clean, healthy, varied plant-based diet can lower your blood pressure, and even if you're still consuming some meat and dairy products. And that's good news. This was published in the journal Hypertension. So the more on a plant-based diet, the healthier you're going to be. And then, and by the way, I have a new video bio coming out on a plant-based diet. It'll be out, I think, tomorrow. And it'll be up on our PRN.F website so you can watch it. From Georgetown University, this a lot of you will recognize this conversation. Quote, health and happiness depend upon each other. How many times have I emphasized you cannot be healthy if you're not happy? And people would say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Of course I can be healthy if I'm not happy. I can have a healthy diet, I can take my supplements, I can go exercise. You're missing the point. That's not true. You can do all that, but you think you're healthy. There's a place on Broadway on the Upper West Side near my old office where I had for like, what, 27 years? And I would walk downtown each evening. And I'd walk back if I was going to a concert or Broadway show or something. And always in this second floor, you would see every one of the treadmills occupied, generally young people, I'm saying in their 20s or 30s. And if you stood there as I would and look up at them, there was extreme tension in their faces. These were not happy people. What they were doing, they were getting in whatever time they had that day from long hours, high-stress jobs, and it was relieving some of the stress. Exercise will do that. But that is not the same as being a healthy person exercising for the right reasons. That is a person in a high-stress position, time limit requirements, who must go and exercise and burn off some of that tension. I saw the same thing when I filmed for a whole day outside of New York's largest and most popular yoga studio. Thousands use it every day. I spoke and filmed the owner, and inside is very peaceful and tranquil. It's just beautiful watching everyone go through the motion, especially the advanced teachers and the positions they can get into. A lot of people try to get in those positions. You have to get a stretcher to get them off the floor. And then go downstairs. And as I did, and film people as they're exiting, and suddenly the energy changes, and they're back into their hyperkinetic, highly stressed, on the cell phones, yelling at someone. Yet just 15 minutes before, they were in a very serene place. So I think that a whole lot of people have conflated the idea, if they're doing a particular diet or exercise or attending a particular lecture, that in itself means they're getting it together. And that could be nothing further from the truth. You shouldn't force yourself to do anything for health. For example, I never think about health. Never. I never have a thought about health. I just do what is healthy. And if for some reason that day I chose not to do something healthy, then that day I'm not healthy. And we see what happens when we get healthy and then slack off. We lose it. So health is a state of mind, it's a state of consciousness, not just a state of physical being. And so you're on a spectrum. And where you're at on the spectrum depends upon how disciplined and determined you are to incorporate that which rebalances your entire being, and the foundation upon which all that rests is happiness. Mind you, I've seen people who have fit bodies but were not healthy because they weren't happy. So understand the pieces are never greater than the whole when it comes to health. So good health and a happy outlook on life may seem like equally worthy yet independent goals, but there's an enormous body of research now that bolsters the case that a happy outlook can have a very real impact on your physical well-being. And new research published in the Journal of Psychological Science shows that both online and in-person psychological interventions, meaning tactics specifically designed to boost subjective well-being, have positive effects on self-reported physical health. And so we have to focus upon, when I wake up today, what in my life allows me to look at the happy side, the optimistic side. And with that, you have to have forgiveness for that which is not under your control, or that which is at some point in your life deemed you vulnerable. As children, as teenagers, people are either young and not intellectually capable of understanding what's happening to them, or they're not so young, but still not intellectually capable, but everything then is processed through their emotions. Therefore, they say, well, I feel this. That in itself does not count. You can feel anything, and feelings can be changed based upon a perception. You can make something that was good bad, and something that was bad good by changing perception. Therefore, reality change. Therefore, the emotions emitted from the reality change. You have to think a thought before you can express a thought emotionally. So the thought always precedes the emotion, but frequently it comes so fast that we're not connecting the two. And hence, by focusing upon happy outcomes in life, you have to focus upon yourself being the architect of that outcome. What can I do personally today to make it a better world? Not just for myself, but for other people. And you say, but I don't have the wherewithal. There are too many homeless people, too many. You can say that there's a shortage, or you could say there's an abundance. The abundance means you're going to take the time to focus upon what you can do that's positive. The shortage means there's a breakdown, in which case you become identified as a victim, not only of the society around you, but of your incompatibility with growth, in which case there's no happiness, there's sadness. And with sadness, there's victimization. With victimization, there's recycling behavior that is addictive in nature, the need to hang out with groups of people that reconfirm your victimhood. I think that's extremely dangerous. Whereas you almost never see people hanging out together to talk about why they're happy. I mean, do you ever see anybody call you and say, ah, darn it, I got to apologize, I'm happy today. What do you mean? Well, I've chosen not to gossip, complain, blame anybody. I'm finding reasons to do things that are under my control, and I'm choosing not to pollute the environment, so I'm conscious of what I'm buying. I'm asking for paper instead of plastic. I'm doing my own little infinitesimal stuff, infinitesimal to the whole world. But there are other people out there probably doing the same thing. So if I choose not to eat meat or dairy, if I choose to see an animal as a sentient being instead of my next meal, if I choose to look at the corruption of all a body politic and therefore look for the independents who represent a higher form of idealism instead of the completely corrupt sociopaths running for office, then I will not buy into that supercilious argument that, oh, the lesser of two evils is better than. No, it's not. It's still evil. The outcome is still predicated upon us not looking for an option. So everything I'm doing today is based upon what I can control, which is a lot. And so I'm taking my time, not rushing, and I'm conscious of the day. I'm conscious of me moving fluidly, emotionally, intellectually, creatively, energetically throughout the day. I was watching yesterday, by the way, now you get a little bit of understanding in proper context about why it's so important to focus upon happiness, because then that's the bedrock upon which everything else works better, because if you're happy, you're an optimist. You're looking at positive solutions instead of looking to justify your outrage or negativity or displacement of positive thoughts and then doubling down on it. So, in any case, yesterday I was watching a video we just put up, and the video really wasn't put up for the audience. It was put up as part of what's going to be an effort that we're taking in five steps over the next 8 weeks. The first step's already taken. The second step is in motion now. It'll be released this week, and the third next week. I'll discuss all this next week, because then Wikimedia Foundation, Wikipedia, the editors will all be fully aware of what I'm doing. And they should have read Lao Tzu's book on the art of war. They really are. Boy, when you get very arrogant, conceited, because there's no consequence to your negative actions, you assume that you are omnipotent. Maybe in that moment you are. You can destroy reputations of good people. You can keep hundreds of millions of people from doing something that could keep them healthier and happier. But in time, you catch up with that karma. So anyhow, we put up there two videos. One is a race indoor, and one is a race outdoor. A little context. I've never posted these before, by the way. In fact, none of the stuff I'm posting have I ever posted in my 53-year career. I am now, for a very specific reason, because the people on Wikipedia have said none of this is real. None of it. So you're going to actually see what is real. So when I'm doing an indoor championship and all those people lining up on that line with me, they're all champions. And you'll see I start lapping them on an indoor lap. And I set a world record. We had four people, and you can see the people there writing down the times as I go by every lap. It was interesting, the outcome of that, but I want people to see what it is when you're the fastest person in the world doing something. And that's not the first time that's happened. But then on the outdoor, that's a different race because it was open, meaning 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. I think the guy won is 20 years old. Olympic team. These are the Olympians and the national team members. Great athletes, by the way. And nice people, all of them. I know them all. And Kirk Clawson, Dave McGovern, these are top athletes. Nick Badero. But there I'm in there also. It was a boiling hot day. I think it was 97, 98 degrees. And it was a 15K, which is a 9.3-mile race. And I came in, overall, of all the athletes, I think I came in 10th place. In any case, I was the first master athlete. And the guy who won it was going at a 6-minute pace. I started at 6, but I went to 7 minutes. Inside the indoor, I went at a low 6-minute pace. To give you an idea, since one foot's always on the ground, that would have been a 4-minute mile if I was running it. But each mile, and I was on a 7-minute pace. And it looks smooth, so you don't realize how fast that is until you go out there on a very hot day and you run 9 miles at a 7-minute pace, and you start seeing how hard it is. So it shows you that neither in none of the 600 races I've won, the World Games, multiple times gold medals, all this, athlete of the year, multiple times, athlete of the meet, multiple times. I'm competing with 3,000 athletes, and I took that many times. None of that is in Wikipedia. So then we find them talking about how they can exclude every positive thing I've ever done, but not only me, but everyone else, Deepak Chopra, Robert Kennedy Jr., anybody they're attacking. They never put anything that's honest about what you've achieved. So now we are showing them how much has been achieved that they have not mentioned and how everything they did mention is wrong. So we're showing that nothing can be believed on Wikipedia, in our opinion, because it is completely biased from the get-go. Now we're also showing who's behind it. That's a surprise they thought nobody would ever find. Well, we found it. So all this will be revealed to the public within the next 4 weeks. The lawsuits, what we're doing that I cannot mention now that's going to really impact Wikipedia. But watch those two things for two reasons. One is because it shows you when you hear about Wikipedia, you know that you're not getting the honest story of what myself or anyone else in the alternative field has ever achieved. And two, you're seeing the truth of something because I couldn't be out there doing that as I've done my whole life, adult life, if I didn't believe in myself. I'm not competing against the other athletes. I have way too much respect for them to do that. I'm competing against any thought that I am limited. If I feel I'm limited, I become limited. If I feel it's too hot to do something, then the heat and my mind's acceptance of that heat become my limitation. Bannister broke the 4-minute mile because he stopped believing that the human body couldn't run faster than 4 minutes. He did 3:58. And then all these other people did it. They were waiting for someone to break a system to do it. Now, similarly, there's a new video, a whole documentary. It's 2 hours and 44 minutes long. Every single thing in there is independent validation that during the 1980s and 90s, I cured 10 people with full-blown AIDS and had seroconversion of HIV positive negative at both the Institute for Applied Biology and the Tri-State Healing Center. But it wasn't me saying that. It is the journalist. It is the patients. It is the staff, the medical doctors and staff, because they were there. And these are all board certified. And they're saying, yeah, we never had a patient die. Now, what place in the world has 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS being treated and not one of them die in all those years? We did. And yet the whole world of AIDS, run by Anthony Fauci and Robert Gallo, didn't want to know this. The media didn't want to know it. The ACT UP group, one segment of them, didn't want to know it because it all aligned with one belief about AIDS, one treatment modality, and that's where the money was, and that's where the power was, and that's the same mindset they have today with COVID-19. So watch it. Share it. You won't see it anywhere else, and it puts to the lie that everything that's gone on besides that. All right? That's the latest on health and healing. Now, I want to share a few things before we go to a break and come back and talk about Confucianism. But here are some things that I'm going to share that are all based upon medicine. This is from Clinical Respiratory Cardiology, 2020, by the way. This is new. It's got all these article authors. Quote, ventilation, cardiopulmonary exercise capacity, and comfort are reduced by surgical masks and highly impaired by FFP2 N95 masks in healthy individuals. These data are important for recommendations on wearing face masks at work or during physical exercise. Have you heard about this? The answer is no. Is this in any major media? No. And then, quote, the first randomized crossover study assessing the effects of surgical masks and FFP2-N95 masks on cardiopulmonary exercise capacity yields clear results. Both masks have a marked negative impact on exercise parameters, such as maximum power output and the maximum oxygen uptake. And the masks show consistently more pronounced negative effects compared to surgical masks. Both masks significantly reduce pulmonary parameters at rest and a maximum load, and further wearing the mask was perceived as very uncomfortable with a marked effect on subjective breathing resistance with the FFP2/N95 mask. Quote, from our data, we conclude that wearing a medical mask, face mask, has a significant impact on pulmonary parameters both at rest and during maximal exercise in healthy adults. These data suggest a myocardial compensation for the pulmonary limitations in the healthy volunteers. In patients with impaired myocardial function, this compensation may not be possible, end quote. And then it goes on from there. Again, whether you choose to wear a mask or not, know the truth about them, and that's something you won't see. Also, the PCR test, which is the primary test being used, and this is from Global Research, and here's what it says. And Global Research, by the way, is very qualified in what it allows to be published. This is from Torsten Engelbrecht and Konstantin Dimitri. And it says, quote, lockdowns and hygienic measures around the world are based upon a number of cases and mortality rates created by the so-called SARS-CoV-2 PCR test used to identify, quote, positive patients, whereby positive is usually equated with infected. But looking closely at the facts, the conclusion is that these PCR tests are meaningless as a diagnostic tool to determine an alleged infection by a supposedly new virus called SARS-CoV-2. At the media briefing on COVID-19 on March 16, 2020, the World Health Organization Director General said, quote, we have a simple message for all countries, test, test, test. The message was spread through headlines around the world, for instance, by Reuters and BBC. Still, on the 3rd of May, the moderator of the Hewitt Journal, one of the most important news magazines on German television, was passing the mantra of the Corona dogma onto his audience with the astonishing words, quote, test, test, test. That is the credo at the moment and is the only way to really understand how much the coronavirus is spreading. This indicates the belief in the validity of the PCR test is so strong that it equals a religion that tolerates virtually no contradiction. But it is well known that religions are about faith and not about scientific facts. And as Walter Lippmann, the two-time Pulitzer Prize winner and perhaps the most influential journalist of the 20th century, said, quote, we all think alike. No one thinks very much. So to start, it is very remarkable that Kerry Mullis himself, the inventor of the polymerase chain reaction PCR technology, did not think alike. His invention got him the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1993. Unfortunately, Mullis passed away last year at the age of 74, but there's no doubt that the biochemist regarded the PCR as inappropriate to detect a viral infection. The reason is that the intended use of the PCR was and still is to apply it as a manufacturing technique, being able to replicate DNA sequences millions and billions of times, and not as a diagnostic tool to detect viruses. How declaring virus pandemics based upon PCR tests can end in disaster was described by Gina Collada in her 2007 New York Times article, Faith in Quick Tests Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't. Moreover, it is worth mentioning that the PCR test used to identify so-called COVID-19 patients presumably infected by what is called COVID-2 do not have a valid gold standard to compare them with. This is a fundamental point. Tests need to be evaluated in to determine their preciseness, strictly speaking, their sensitivity and specificity by comparing with a gold standard, meaning the most accurate method available. As an example, for a pregnancy test, the gold standard would be the pregnancy itself. But the Australian infectious disease specialist, for example, stated in an ABC television interview in answer to the question, how accurate is the COVID-19 testing? Quote, if we had a new test for picking up the bacterium, golden staph, in blood, we've already got blood cultures. That's our gold standard we've been using for decades. And we could match this new test against that. But for COVID-19, we do not have a gold standard test, end quote. Jessica Watson from Bristol University confirms this in the peer-reviewed paper interpreting a COVID test result published in the British Medical Journal. She writes that there, quote, is a lack of such a clear-cut gold standard for COVID-19 testing, end quote. By the way, that's a British Medical Journal saying that. But instead of classifying the test as unsuitable for SARS-CoV detection and COVID-19 diagnosis, or instead of pointing out that only a virus proven through isolation and purification can be a solid gold standard, Watson claims in all seriousness that, quote, pragmatically, COVID-19 diagnosis itself, remarkably include PCR testing itself, may be the best available gold standard, but this is not scientifically sound. So apart from the fact that it is downright absurd to take the PCR test itself as part of the gold standard to evaluate the PCR test, there are no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19, as even people such as Thomas Leuchter, former head of the Department of Infection Tropical Medicine at the University of Munich and member of the Federal Association of German Scientists, concluded to us, quote, and if there are no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19 diagnosis, contrary to Watson's statement, cannot be suitable for serving as a valid gold standard. In addition, quote, experts such as Watson overlook the fact that only virus isolation, i.e. an unequivocal virus proof, can be a gold standard. That is why I ask Watson how COVID-19 diagnosis, quote, may be the best available gold standard if there's no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19, and also whether the virus itself that is, virus isolation wouldn't be the best available possible gold standard. But she wasn't, but she hasn't answered these questions yet, despite numerous requests. And she has not yet responded to our rapid response post on her article in which we address exactly the same points. All right. So now the question is, what is required first for virus isolation and proof? We need to know where the RNA for which the PCR tests are calibrated comes from. And then it goes through, this is a long article, I'm just giving you a piece of it, but this is a methodical deconstruction of what is currently, you know, the latest word on the proof that everybody's getting the test. But what if you're getting a test that is not a gold standard, and it's not? And I knew Kerry Mullis. I filmed him many times, and he was adamant that his test was being misused in the diagnosing of people with AIDS. Also, I want to share this with you, and this is about a summary of the recently published New England Journal of Medicine Moderna Phase 1 SARS-2 vaccine trial. Mind you, everyone's on it. Everybody's saying how good their stock went up, billions of dollars made, and yet there were significant percentages of adverse reactions in the young, healthy Caucasian volunteers. So this is from Dr. Gary Coles. Quote, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Bill Gates funded Moderna and its fast-tracked experimental SARS-CoV-2 vaccine phase 1 preliminary trial shows that large percentages of the subject had significant adverse reactions. But every report on the trial that was published in the mainstream media and financial press totally ignored the adverse effects, focusing instead on the fact that, essentially irrelevant, that neutralizing antibodies had been produced. The trial consisted of a tiny number, 45 young people, ages 25 to 41, healthy individuals, Caucasians, no infants, no children, no adolescents, or anybody over the age of 41 were involved. Well, to me, that's a fraudulent study. That's my opinion. And you're going to give it to everyone. You're going to give this vaccine to children, non-Caucasians. You're going to give it to the senior citizens especially. And yet you excluded them by intent. And I personally feel by malice aforethought that if you used the average person in a study, the ones that's going to get the vaccine, you would have had so many adverse effects that it would have been thrown in the junk heap. So you cherry-picked the people. You got the healthiest people and only a tiny fraction. How legitimate is it to have 45 people in a study when you could be mandating this to 300 million Americans? So the fast-track trial began March 16th. With all regions for the vaccine having been fully developed by the startup vaccine corporation Moderna, the majority of shares of which are reportedly held by the National Institutes of Health. Conflict of interest. Because who's promoting National Institutes of Health? And who there? Anthony Fauci. Why? Because in the National Institutes of Health, you have an umbrella group, the National Institutes for Allergy and Infectious Disease, and Bill Gates. So funding for the manufacture of this phase one material was provided by Bill Gates Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, or CEPI. Solicited adverse events that occurred in more than half the people included fatigue, chills, headache, myalgia, pain at the injection point, and the adverse effects that occurred in less than 50% were not published in the report. But Moderna's share prices rose significantly following the release of that phase one data. So that's what we're dealing with. You know, and so we're dealing with stuff that is bad to the bone. So anyhow, expect that to be one of the front runners. Now this is from another site, COVID-19 vaccines with, quote, minor side effects could still be pretty bad. Quote, the risk of nasty side effects in the Moderna and Oxford trials should be made clear now before it ends up as fodder for the skeptics. More good news on progress towards an escape route for this pandemic. Then it goes into it. So they're letting you know, yeah, there's side effects. and there's a tiny little group. But if you don't get everybody who would take the vaccine involved in the trial, you get, in my opinion, you get a fraudulent trial. But maybe Lee Camp said it best. He said the life-saving COVID-19 drugs you're never heard of, and why. And this is his quote, "Musk cutthroat late-stage capitalism always so predictable." Quote from Lee Camp, special to Consortium News. "The American profit-based healthcare system impacts us in more ways than just one gargantuan bill at the excretion end of an emergency room visit. Right now, our lovable, idiotic, inhumane healthcare system is acting as a hurdle to the manufacturers and procurement of the right doses and drugs to treat COVID-19. One of the drugs currently trumpeted as our new savior," and it goes in to explain what Remdesivir, despite sounding like the name of a hobbit in Middle Earth, some reports from the corporate media make it sound like the drug will thrust us face first into a fresh world of happiness, water parks and restaurants, random no holds barred makeouts with strangers. A world where someone sneezes, we don't dive under our desk with an adult diaper strapped to our faces and makeshift masks. There's only one problem. The big pharma company that owns this drug, Gilead, has already made clear their plans to profiteer from this pandemic. A Los Angeles Times put it, quote, drug maker Gilead says it's doing you a favor by setting the price for its pending COVID-19 treatment drug at more than $2,000 for government agencies and over $3,000 for private insurers, end quote. How does the CEO of Gilead, Daniel O'Day, justify this disgusting price point? He claims they're underpriced. He says, in normal circumstances, we would price a medicine according to the value it provides. Earlier hospital discharge would result in hospital savings approximately $12,000 per patient. The value it provides, so if a doctor saves someone's life with heart surgery, then that guy owes the doctor the entire worth of the rest of their life? Millions of dollars? Maybe he should become the surgeon's butler or wet nurse. And he goes on to talk about this is all about profit. And it is, because we already have drugs that have been shown, as you will hear tomorrow, drugs that are able to be taken that will kill off the virus and help people who have got the virus at all stages to live. So I think it's important. But we don't hear any of this. The whole media has gone nuts. And before I go to my break and then talk about Confucianism, I received an email saying, Gary, I never hear you play anonymous rants. And why? Well, first of all, they have to make sense. But this one, I'm going to play for you. I'm going to read it. All right? So for whoever sent it, I don't know who sent it, you can accept or reject it, but this is probably someone outside of the New York, Los Angeles spectrum. By all means, if you want to stay home, stay home. If you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you want to avoid large crowds, avoid large crowds. No more dinner parties, that's fine too. However, I'm not required to descend into poverty for you. I'm not required to abstain from human contact for you. I'm not required to shop alone without my kids for you. I'm not required to forfeit my right to peacefully assemble and protest for you. So excuse me. If I refuse to participate in quarantine life until there's an ineffective, unsafe, and untested vaccine released sometime in the future, if I refuse to receive said vaccine to make others feel more safe or to obtain a little health passport or a chip to prove I am obedient and compliant, now, if you're convinced the vaccine is safe and effective, you can get it yourself or get two for a safe measure. You can have mine. There are some allowing fear and orders by authorities thoroughly devoid of any rational or scientific foundation to destroy the world as we know it. But we have to do a right to take reasonable risks. Life is full of bacteria and viruses, and always has been, many of which can spread before symptoms manifest and after they've subsided. We have a fundamental right to receive or refuse vaccines. The data about the virus is inconsistent to the point of incoherence, and the data are distorted to justify government control and overreach. Stop allowing the World Health Organization, the CDC, politicians of all stripes, and the Gates Foundation to destroy our food supply, our jobs, our schools, our small businesses, our medical choice and autonomy, our access to meaningful health care, our privacy rights, human interaction and fellowship, everything that has given our lives some meaning, even in an imperfect world. The new abnormal will be one of mass unemployment, homelessness, starvation, depression, suicide, child abuse, addiction, domestic violence, imprisonment, increased police brutality, massive government spying, and pure desperation. The current virus will look far preferable to the world you helped facilitate, so I'm going to turn this around on people from now on. Those who proclaim that anyone who supports the mission to get the world out of lockdown is putting money over lives, carefully consider this. Just maybe it is you who does not truly care about the people that will take their own lives out of hopelessness and desperation. It just may be you who does not truly care about virtually all of the small shops and restaurants and businesses forced to close their doors prematurely, leaving us only Amazon and its ilk. So maybe it's just you who is not thinking about the children, women, men that will be victims of using the rising abuse domestically. Maybe it's about you, not understanding the seriously ill and those forced to die alone, who are denied the physical presence and the touch of their children and partners and loved ones, surrounded only by machines and anonymous personnel in hazmat suits. Or about your neighbors defaulting on their mortgages, who will swell the ranks of the world's homelessness, or about the bills going unpaid by families with zero income in the here and now, or about people wondering where their children's next meal will come from, or what widespread malnutrition and even starvation, and about the human beings who are losing their jobs and livelihoods and their sobriety, and those who will slip back into alcoholism and drug addiction, and about the rioting, the rise in crime, and the inevitable looting that will take place out of genuine need of people about what they do not have. All races, the longer the shutdown goes on, will be affected, about our psychological equilibrium and well-being, about the children who need human teachers and educators to guide them, not screens to mesmerize them, about the artists, the theater people, and the musicians who cannot make their art or perform their music and plays because audiences and all social gatherings are now verboten, or as we say it now, canceled. About the economy crashing down around us as we speak, and the unthinkability of massive bailouts of banks and big businesses, worse than the world has ever seen. And about the countless innocent victims of wars waged around the world, but ignored here at home because we are busy wasting away. About the rollout of 5G dystopia while our eyes are wide shut. About the mass demonstrations that will not happen just when we need them most. You seem to love your new muscles and shackles. You're begging the very rulers you purport to despise for more and longer shutdown, for more isolation from your loved ones and fellow humans, and the more regulations over every facet of your existence. But I will not tolerate being told that I don't care about the lives of my fellow human beings. I care very much about the situation in its entirety, and I care as much as you do about protecting the vulnerability of those who should be protected. Anyhow, that's only a part of it, but so, wanted to play it. We're going to play a clip right now that's very important. And it's important because we didn't know that there was an organization that is intent, and you'll hear the person who founded the organization, working with government agencies and others, intent on monitoring you 24/7 to find out what you're saying when it concerns vaccines, and then stopping you in whatever means they have at their disposal from sharing that information. So let's just say, for argument's sake, that you had three children. True story, by the way. Two of the children received all their vaccines as they were instructed. Both children ended up with autism spectrum disorder. So out of an excess of precaution, with the third child, they began to do all their research that they had not done before, and found that virtually everything they were told about the safety and efficacy of the vaccines was wrong. So now they chose not to vaccinate their child, but rather to breastfeed and to allow the child's immune system to be built up naturally. Also, they found physicians and other ways of helping to detoxify the two children who were injured. And no one took responsibility, the doctors, the hospitals, nobody would say it was the vaccines. But from this person's research, it was the vaccines. So now, today, you would be considered no better, in my opinion, than a domestic terrorist. The World Health Organization lists you as one of the top 10 health problems in the world today, meaning an educated consumer who is looking for the truth, finds it, and wants to share it. So they're monitoring you nonstop, in their own words, nonstop, 24/7. Let's go now to this clip from Big Tree so you can hear what he has to say and then hear what the founder of the organization has to say in response.
When it comes to monitoring, sometimes there's government agencies and sometimes there's private agencies, maybe funded by government bodies or maybe funded by the pharmaceutical industry. And one of these monitoring agencies or a group that has come together is very, very oddly specific. They are tracking all of the social media regarding discussions about vaccine hesitancy. Who are they doing it for? What are they doing it for? Who's funding them? Well, if you want to know what I'm talking about, then maybe I will have to reference you to this ad by Vector that you may have seen. I'm not sure if you followed what that video said. It almost put me into a trance. I'm not sure they're accomplishing what they want by putting everyone to sleep, but clearly we now have a group. Project Vector is tracking those of us that are questioning the safety of vaccines, which I guess they're describing as misinformation. We did a little bit of research, actually, into this group. There's more and more, you know, murmurings about who is Project Vector, what's it up to. It looks like they're trying to supply information to investigative reporters and different medical people and systems to figure out how to shift the clearly growing movement, you, the people, smart, intelligent people that are now asking the right questions about safety. How are things tested? You know, why can't they prove with a vax versus unvax study that vaccines make you healthier? Behind, though, Project Vector is a guy named Joe Smizer. There's a few videos out there, one where he gives a huge presentation about Project Vector. Obviously, I think, you know, out there, trying to raise money for his group. And then he did a Q&A, so you'll see a couple of those videos. But first, I want to just let Joe describe what Project Vector is in his own words. Take a look at this.
Project Vector was set up specifically for vaccine misinformation. Project Vector, at the moment, PGP, Public Good Projects, is the only organization in the United States that monitors continuously, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, vaccine misinformation. What we do every day is large-scale behavior change programs for public health. So we monitor all data from publicly available media sources. So any social media data we can get our hands on, but also television, like broadcast news, print, so newspapers and magazines, pretty much every website, just anything we can purchase and analyze using big data techniques. It's what do we do with them once we find them? That's the real question that we're faced with.
Why are we losing? Why are the vaccine safety people losing so badly?
I think we need a really, really dramatic change in our tactics. We don't know what we're doing. We need help. We need dramatic changes in strategies and tactics. It has not plateaued and things are getting worse. And I don't think we can solve this problem without acknowledging that things are getting worse every day. They're not getting better.
You do need help. In fact, you know, what's really ironic, so, I mean, this thing goes on for like an hour or so, but the gist of it is essentially we can't just rely upon the millions of dollars funneled into brainwashing through mainstream media on CNN and MSNBC and Fox. That's not getting the job done. We've got to start reaching out to the people and let the people fight for the truth about vaccines and the information there. But I just, Joe, I mean, honestly, you know, one of your big issues is why is the message of vaccine hesitancy spreading so rigorously across the internet? I guess you didn't get the memo. You didn't get the memo from the World Health Organization meeting last December in Geneva, Switzerland, where Heidi Larson had something to say about the vaccine misinformation. You might find this interesting while you do your incredible deep dive in how to make a difference in this world. Joe?
That's it for today's show. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.